Welcome back to Tech Hygiene. We help you stay sane in a crazy world. Say hi to your hosts, John Biggs and Lauren Feldman.
Welcome back to Tech Hygiene, the podcast for, it's now an NFT. We're going to create an NFT of this podcast, and only certain people are allowed to purchase it. Does that sound okay, Lauren?
I like it a lot, actually.
Yeah. So only certain people are allowed to listen to this. If you have purchased this episode, you owe us $2 to $3 million, and nobody else can listen to it. So enjoy what you have. If you're listening to it illegally, there's a big problem. Big problem.
We're going to go after them. I'm well. Yeah. How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right. I got a little gut issue, but I think I'll be all right. I had some soup, so I think that'll calm it all down.
Soup is always good.
A minestrone. I can't find any good soup these days. Anyways, what else we got going on? So we got Australia banned news on Facebook, or Facebook banned its own news on Facebook in Australia. What's the shtick here?
I guess they were supposed to pay Australia. And rather than come to any kind of agreement, mm-hmm. they just pulled all links and news pages, mm-hmm. I believe. And it's over money, and obviously isn't everything always. And I guess eventually they caved, and I think they're coming to some sort of deal. But it was bad because, unfortunately, a lot of people get their news from Facebook, even in Australia. So they were saying it's a public nuisance not having the news. It's crazy. Is that basically right?
That's basically it. I'm looking at it now. So basically, they had it's a bargaining law that would force major tech giants to pay news outlets for their content. So the assumption is if somebody shares a New York Times article through Facebook, then there's some sort of royalties to be paid there, I suppose, is what you would do. If Facebook and Google do not sign commercial deals with traditional media outlets, the treasurer can designate them and force them to pay for access to news content. The government promised to make further amendments to the code, including giving Facebook more time to strike those deals. So this is similar to Google, Apple News, for example. I don't know if they're paying sites to
Apple News was doing some kind of weird Apple-esque split, except it was a flop. A lot of people pulled out because the traffic and revenue was negligible.
Well, the trick with that is that you have to share your entire post with Apple News, so you get no views, you get no support, and apparently there was some kind of inside job there where. I think it was only like Viacom properties or something were getting the most play. There was some kind of weird thing where only Universal or somebody was doing the.
Yeah, I never liked Apple News.
Yeah, and I don't even look at it. And that whole Apple News Plus, where you can get a magazine and everything, blew it
and
off.
I read this morning though, Google supposedly in negotiations with the EU about getting news back over there in a equitable manner, I guess.
I mean, I'm fine with it's for all intents and purposes. Let's let Facebook remove news, and let's not use Facebook as a news source. I mean, I'm saying this knowing full well that it'll never happen, but there really should be no reason that I'm going to Facebook for a piece of news. It's ridiculous.
Agreed.
And Twitter for that matter. I mean, that said, I use it as a broadcast medium. Love me some broadcasting through Facebook, through Twitter. But again, it's so stupid.
Yeah, but here we are. So
here we are.
It's not even worth discussing because it's never going back in the bag.
But let's say we did this podcast. This was considered news, right? Or whatever you want to call it. We did that podcast and we put it up onto the, onto Facebook, what would we want out of it? We want like 5 cents per click. What do we want?
I don't know. I mean, the famous exposure.
Yeah.
The famous, I don't have any money for you, but it's great exposure.
Yeah. I have loads of, I have loads of followers. The value that I get out of those followers, except for the occasional like laugh that I get with you guys, like if you pop up or whatever, we just chat. It's minimal, and I know people with million follower counts, and they can't convert. They really have no use for any of that stuff. So putting your news piece on Facebook or Twitter is the equivalent of essentially just yelling your headline in a crowded room and then running away. It really has no bearing on the conversations that are going around you.
Correct. I think more people, meaning media companies, will get hip to it.
We'll see. I don't know.
Especially bigger ones. I mean, the Epoch Times and nonsense like that's always going to game it. But yeah, does CNN and big brands like that need to be on Facebook at all? Probably not.
No, absolutely not.
Right.
I mean, there's so many other ways. But again, I don't go to CNN every day, nor do I watch CNN, nor do I have access to CNN in any actionable form. So, but the question is, does CNN want me, John Biggs, an editor dude, as a customer? I mean, they want somebody who's going to go to CNN and purchase, I don't know, whatever the Democratic version of the MyPillow is. But I'm not going to go on that site and do anything of any value to them.
Right.
I don't know. Anyway, what else we got going on? We got the.
The Clubhouse.
Oh, yeah, Clubhouse.
So Clubhouse was hacked by the Chinese, and people are freaking out as if it's an issue.
So apparently what they did is they reverse engineered the APIs, or essentially they reverse engineered the methods that the app communicates with the server. So the trick with Clubhouse is it's completely closed. It's a closed service. There's no like special little Clubhouse. There's no Clubhouse API that you can use to connect to, which means there's no way to make your own programs based around the Clubhouse system. Which, I mean, let's say you wanted to record them or you wanted to do something special. I mean, recording Clubhouse is as simple as just putting another phone next to your phone and just pressing a button. So that's ridiculous. But say you wanted to know when your friend was popping up, you wanted a little widget. That's not available to programmers.
Okay.
But what the Chinese did is they reverse engineered the communications. So every time you use the app, it's sending data back to the main server and giving you the information, giving you the audio, and so they reverse engineered it, and they had websites and things that allowed you to basically just use Clubhouse without the app, and download stuff and copy stuff and listen to stuff just randomly. So that was a big no-no apparently, and it was actually such a surprising thing because like guys like Jason Calacanis were amazed that they could be listened to on a app that's completely public and contains thousands of people, and that their words could be used against them eventually, which is why a lot of people loved Clubhouse, because you could basically just blather all you wanted and you're done.
Right. Well, once again, these nitwits assumed privacy on, as you said, and maybe the easiest thing to hack ever, because you don't need any hacking skills. You just need to hit record on your phone, as you mentioned.
Yeah, you just show up.
So the whole thing was ridiculous. What are the Chinese? I want to know what the Chinese think, like when they get it and they're like, ooh, we got American stuff. Let's take a peek. And it's all mastermind class. How to get rich.
It's the juice cleanse room.
Juice cleanse room. I hate Jews room. Mastermind, they must be like, Americans are poor, depressed, and gullible. Like, what kind of data are they even gleaning from it,
Well,
nothing.
I mean, well, look, actually nothing. So it's like, let's call it compromat. I think the Clubhouse is popular right now because this allows the average
schmo
to create their own little disrupt, TechCrunch disrupt. You can get on a couple good people. They hop on, they talk for a little while, and it's.
There's two elements to Clubhouse. There's the room with 10 to 20 people.
Yeah.
Who kind of sort of know each other, and the phrase that they use, which makes me want to blow my brains out, is this virtual dinner party.
Mm-hmm. Virtual dinner party, sure.
Yeah, having a virtual dinner party. Mm-hmm. And then the other element is like pirate radio, where it's a couple of knuckleheads broadcasting to, you know, thousands of people.
Yeah.
So that's how it's being used. I, of course, prefer the former. I like, you know, just hopping onto a room, you know, talking to a few people, whatever. But I think that's not the real appeal, though. The real appeal is the ego play and, you know.
Yeah, the broadcast, the ability to broadcast. And it's great to have 1,000 people listening to you. And that's why these guys love things like South by Southwest, but you can't do South by Southwest anymore. And also the assumption in a lot of these South by Southwest or like these events is that what you say on stage with some moderator who's lobbing you softballs has no outside effect. So nobody's going to notice that you said, like, I don't know, I hate public schools on a stage in Bucharest during education.com week or something like that. Some kind of random event out in the middle of nowhere. So they love this. They love Clubhouse because it kind of recreates that feeling of absolute freedom without the having to go hang out with somebody in for dinner or whatever, which was one of the benefits of going on these junkets that they put together.
Well, the junket stuff was always more fun in the hallways and the bars anyway.
Yeah.
But I think the ultimate appeal with this whole thing is just the broadcasting to thousands of people and, you know, the ego circle jerk kind of thing. I mean, it's a party line. I mean, I log on every now and then. I definitely open it every day just because I like reading the room names and seeing if I see anybody in them. Like that's the other.
I haven't opened it in weeks.
Oh, I open it and just see who's in what rooms. And sometimes I feel embarrassed and ashamed for my friends because I'll be like, I'll open the app and I'll see somebody I know and dig and they're in some ridiculous room. And I'm like, what the fuck, dude?
You know? Happy birthday, Susu Jimmy. Bitcoin Bloodbath featuring a few Bitcoin people, NFTs, 24 hours with the Hustle Fund, prioritizing parenting.
I'm going to open mine and I get different rooms.
I don't see any like full bore like anti-Semitic rooms.
Booze, weed, fitness, and periods, building brands.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, I see that one. That's a good one.
Lunchtime talks, let's fight about chicken soup. Oh, a soup one for you. You should pop in there.
I should get into the soup. In fact,
here, you know what? I am popping in there. Hold on.
Love it. Well, thanks. That's great. Love a pho. Danny, you also put yuca in your chicken soup. Go on.
Not in my chicken soup, but my parents are Brazilian, so we can't have a cookout without yuca. Yeah, we love fried yuca. Yes, oh, I do. Gosh. I love fried portuguese. but my favorite.
All right, now let's go into booze, weed, fitness, and periods building brands. 2,000 people. 2,000 people.
2,000 people.
Yeah.
Waiting room. We're going to try to bring everybody up as soon as we can. But let me just reset real quick. We're talking entrepreneurship. We're talking with four or five, depending on who else comes up on stage, extremely intelligent, accomplished, young entrepreneurs and founders. The title of the room is Booze, Weed, Fitness, and Periods. We are doing hopefully a quick Q&A to get everybody up here. And next in the rotation is...
There you go.
That's really exciting. I'm really... you know what? It's if you look at the arc of history, we went from radio to television to like really bad radio to like slightly better radio with the Beatles on it. And then we had television, then we had streaming video and audio and 3D, then you had VR, and then we just went back to radio. To the Folgers hour with Joey Bonaventura.
At least Joey Bonaventura had some talent as opposed to some marketing schmuck. Just like, you know, it's unbearable. Okay. But that's Clubhouse. That's what the Chinese got. Weed, booze, brands, and 2000 nitwits.
I'm glad they got it. I'm glad they have access to our deepest thoughts these days. It's really exciting.
Let's get back to this NFT thing you were goofing about in the beginning.
Yeah, what do you think about NFTs? You into NFTs?
Well, it's funny, but I just read about Bippy. Is that his name?
Beeple.
I read this guy selling millions of dollars worth of JPEGs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I've been thinking about trying to get myself into the Museum of Modern Art via video with mm-hmm. the puppets and doing some, like, you know, weird puppet videos or weird videos and pushing them off as artwork and not publishing them anywhere and just selling them to one person, and whatever they do with it, they do with it. I really was thinking about that. And just last night, I discovered Blippi or Bippy or Bippity Boo. And I dig the whole concept. Why not? I don't understand, once again, how I actually get paid. I get paid in Ethereum through the blockchain, through Coinbase.
You don't have to. You don't have to get paid in Ethereum.
Explain it to me.
All right. So an NFT is a non-fungible token, right? Okay. So let's assume I got a Fabergé egg, right? Mm-hmm. It's a unique Fabergé egg. Nobody else has it. Nobody else in the world can own it except for me. Now, how do you do that in the digital realm? You can't have a Fabergé egg in the digital realm unless you do this non-fungible token thing. And this basically connects a specific file or a specific...
I make the puppet genius video.
You make a genius video.
And now what?
You give it to me and I run it through a special algorithm that gets all the information that it needs to about that specific video, the time and date it was recorded, the camera that it used, the information about you, your private key, your personal information that I know it's Lauren Feldman specifically. And I code that into a thing that goes onto the Ethereum blockchain. And it just basically, it's like a pointer. It's like a card catalog. It's not okay, the actual object,
but it's establishing ownership of the object.
Of this digital file, this piece of digital information.
And where is this piece of file? Where is the file?
It could be anywhere.
Okay.
But the specific file that you have exists and can be recreated, potentially be recreated, because you have this NFT.
Okay, so I give you my file. Okay, how do you sell it? You register it. You do all that stuff.
You register it with your information, your personal information. Lauren Feldman own this thing, and you say I'm gonna mint, or I'm gonna create 5 copies of it. I'm gonna sell them for an ETH each. So today it's what? 1650, which went down nuts recently. 1650 ETH each. So you have 5 copies. It's about you're gonna do a little less than $10,000 in action. And the person who purchases it from you takes it from you, and you no longer own it. That specific file. And maybe you can download it again. Maybe they can download it again from the server that's holding these files. But for all intents and purposes, they're owning the card in the card catalog that points to the book in the library.
And the book is the file, and the library is whatever server it's stored on.
Yeah, I guess you would. You could say that. And when I buy it from you, I can do anything I want with it. So I could give it away. I could put it on a public server.
Right.
But if you ran a check on it, if you said, hey, whose file is this? Because of the specific way that it's encoded, I would be able to trace it back to you, Lauren Feldman, who sold it to John Biggs, who then sold it to Joe Smith.
I'd like to do this.
Yeah. So we'll get you set up. We're going to do a Lauren Feldman. You're going to recreate the Cremaster cycle, I think. Yeah. With puppets. Do you have that ability? Familiar with the Cremaster cycle?
I'd very much so. I'm a huge, very, very much so. I'm a huge fan. And that's kind of what I'm thinking. Yeah. Things like that. Things that, you know, take puppetry and art and commerce and the blockchain. Just mesh it all. Exactly, Biggs. See, that's why I like you, because you get it.
I'm here to help. That's all. That's what I offer these things. So you're in an NFT. So my take on the whole NFT craze is that right now it's kind of goofy because it's just little images. And I mean, for all intents and purposes, when you buy one of these NFTs, you're technically buying Ether as well. So you're kind of okay. You're not going to lose all your money. But it's kind of silly at this current iteration. I think it's better.
I'd like you to manage my my career, please, when it comes to this stuff.
Your NFT career manager. I'm gonna chomp a cigar.
Yeah, digital only though. I'll maintain you know, other mediums, but any of this NFT stuff, I want you running the show.
All right, I got you.
All right,
set up. Walk into my office, mother, father, son, daughter, little dog. The talent agent says, "Oh, we got enough family acts. I don't think we need another one, but we could use some NFT acts."
Exactly. What's the name of the act? The blockchain.
This has been Tech Hygiene. I am John Biggs.
I'm Lauren Feldman.
And we will NFT you next week.
Tech Hygiene is brought to you by Typewriter. Typewriter is your on-demand editor, and their amazing team of writers will make your book chapter, blog post, or email shine. Typewriter editors come from places like TechCrunch, Gizmodo, and the New York Times, and they offer low bulk rates for longer work. Check it out at typewriter.plus. That's typewriter.plus.